All right. It is a little bit after 6, so I'm going to call the new meeting to order. Linda, you're just going to mark who's here, right? We're not going to do a roll call. All right, so let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I'd ask people to rise for that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a couple real quick county things that I want to polish off, and then we're going to talk about the topic that interests everybody who's here tonight. So we've got a proclamation to start out. Mr. O'Malley, can you take care of that?
Certainly. February 2010, Public Health Month. The county board members have a copy of this in their packet. Whereas the La Crosse County Health Department improves the quality of life and health of all 110,000 people in La Crosse County, rich and poor, residents and tourists, young and old. And whereas the health department is made up of 80 full and part-time staff from the following professions. I won't read all of those, but as you can see, there's a wide range of professions involved in providing service. And whereas the staff of La Crosse County Health Department assists county residents to live a long and productive life free of preventable disease and preventable injury through the following, everything from public information to in-home health nursing and therapy, school vision, STDs, pregnancy testing, hotel and lodging and food inspection, and a variety of other services, we touch lives in so many ways. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of February as Public Health Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of health department staff dedicated to improving the quality of life and health for La Crosse County residents.
Moved by Margaret Wood, second by Sharon Hampson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. We have one appointment tonight.
Chairman Doyle.
One appointment, that is Rick Kite to the Ethics Board for the remainder of the three-year term to expire April 30th of 2012 to replace Father Tom O'Neill.
Is there moved by Chairman Doyle, seconded by Supervisor Ebert. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I have one last announcement before we get to the substance of our agenda. I have about 10 copies of a Rethinking Ways to Fund Local Government conference that's happening next Friday, February 19th. Supervisor Tara Johnson was actually on the planning committee for this. That's Friday, February 19th. I'm not able to make it, but I will have this available if folks want to go. It involves counties and cities from across the state, and it's February 19th at the Pyle Center in Madison from 10 to 4. I'll have some of these up here. I don't think everybody's going to be able to go, but if people want to, it's only $40. It's a good conference and a good discussion. I don't know if Supervisor Johnson had anything more on that, but I did promise to have copies of that. That's the last announcement I have.
Okay, thank you. I would like to extend a very warm welcome to our friends with the city and our friends with the school district. I believe this is the first time we have done this in probably the history of our county, and I think that the topic that we're talking about tonight, which is essentially the future of our community at large, justifies all of our attention. And so I think that it's appropriate that we're together on this particular topic, trying to figure out ways that we can work together. And what I would like to do is to start out we see some of each other on TV, sometimes at campaign time, but don't necessarily know who each other is. And so I'd like to go around real quickly. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Audrey Cotter to introduce the people from the city. I'm going to ask Chris Clare to introduce folks from school district. And then we'll have county board members, because I'm too shy to do it myself, I'll have county board members introduce themselves. So, Audrey, why don't you go ahead first with the city?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I interrupt you for just a moment? If you are sitting out there anywhere, we have a few seats open here, and we're going to have some stuff up on the screen. So come on in and make yourself comfortable in any of the chairs that are open at this point. County board members who aren't here yet, that's their tough beans for not getting here on time. Go ahead, Audrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to recognize the city council members who also serve double duty as county board members, Andrea Richmond and Jay Johnson and myself. I also, our mayor is here tonight, and then council member Sweeney, council member Schwantz, Bob Sequist, Eric Schmidt, Marilyn Wigdahl, just coming in. She was here. She's just come in from the other room. Are there any other council members that I've missed? Mike Larson. Sorry, Mike. And who's that guy?
Chris.
Chris Olson. anyway, those are all the council members present. There are also a number of city staff present. Our Director of Public Works, Dale Hexham, and our city assessor, Mark Schlafer. I didn't know I was going to have to do this. So, Mark Johnson from the Water Utility. There are some newer city staff that I do not know. I have not been introduced to.
Assistant City Engineer Bernie Lenz.
Bernie Lenz, and is there? And Larry Kirch is sitting outside. And there's somebody hidden behind the post. I can't see if. And Wayne Delagrave is there, our finance director. So that's a pretty good turnout from the city, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Very good turnout. Thank you very much, Chris. Can you introduce your folks?
Yeah, David Rudolph.
Ken French.
Tom Thompson.
Connie Tronic.
Deb Supla.
Chris Blair. And we also have some. Oh, Steve
Cook.
And we have some administrators here.
Randy Nelson, Associate Superintendent for Instruction.
Good evening. I'm Steve Salerno. I'm the Associate Superintendent for Human Resources.
All right. Welcome. Appreciate everybody coming. Yeah, we'll hear from him later. We all know he's here. Thank you for coming, Jerry, and for helping to organize this. I want to go through the county board, and we'll start with Ray up front here.
Ray Ebert, West Salem. Dennis Montagne, West Salem, part of Tom Hamilton.
Don Meyer, Lacrosse, 17th District.
Bill Brockman, Lacrosse, 13th District.
Sharon Hampson, City of Lacrosse, 9th District.
Jim Burns, on Alaska.
Doug Spiker, home.
Don Dana, St. Joseph Bridge, 5th District, Plain.
Raj Plesha, District 7, Lacrosse.
Arlene Benner, District 32, Onalaska.
Jill Billings, 6th District in beautiful South Lacrosse.
Jill Beestra, even more beautiful, District 3 in
kind of like watching Miss America, you know. Up here in front, yeah. That's where the comparison ends, though. Up here we have Gary Engelson, our finance director, Steve O'Malley, our county administrator, Bill Shepard, our corporation counsel, Linda Stone, our county clerk, and I'm Steve Doyle from the town of Onalaska. I'm the county board chair. What we're going to do tonight is kind of follow the pattern that we frequently do, which is we get Steve O'Malley up first to depress the hell out of us, to give us a bunch of the numbers and everything, and then we have people come up and make us feel a little bit better. So Steve is going to tell us how what the challenges are that the county is facing, and then we're going to try to talk about some things that we can look at in terms of how to deal with those challenges. So, Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. This really is historic, and I hopefully don't depress you too much about the information. And I think Brian Fukuda, who many of you have met, is our community development specialist, really deserves a lion's share of a lot of the credit for a lot of the ideas we're going to be talking about. While there have been a team of people that have been working together between city, county, and school district to identify challenges and try to provide means for looking for solutions, Brian has been just a great young leader in this community, lives in La Crosse, and really believes very strongly in addressing many of the challenges that we've got. As your county administrator, one of the things that I'm also responsible for is trying to help us challenge ourselves about what is the next thing coming down the pike, what are the things that we should be addressing, even if they're tough challenges, and trying to ask the tough questions of ourselves. And what you've got, we're going to do a very brief summary of this. There are a few slides to try to show this, and it's actually included in the packet that you were given, but if you've had a chance to look at any of this information, it includes a 12-page detailed report, the challenging trends in La Crosse County. It's out on our website. Hopefully you have a hard copy. We're not going to go through every chart and graph, but I do want to be able to summarize some of what we see from the county standpoint impacting our ability to provide services and to control property taxes in our community. I do want to preface, though, that this is not all doom and gloom. I think we have a great deal to be proud of at the city, county, and school district, and that before I get into some of these challenging trends, it would be remiss to act as if all of this is just challenging, that it's difficult, that it's all bad news. Our unemployment rates are comparatively low compared to many other metropolitan statistical areas in the state. Development projects continue even in tough economic times throughout the country. We've got a lot to be proud of and a lot going on. La Crosse, obviously, and we could list all the statistics and rankings that La Crosse comes out as one of the highest ranked areas in the nation, 10 best places to live, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't want to, when I bring on some of these difficult statistics, be pointing fingers or acting as if we've got a lot to be worried about. But there are some disturbing trends that we need to start addressing and finding ways to work together to address those on behalf of our public. So we want to keep working together. We do have a strong history of collaboration. The result of this presentation today is actually what was presented several months ago in what was our sixth or seventh annual, Mr. Chair, collaboration conference?
One of the two.
We'll call it the sixth annual collaboration conference, where we try to bring a forum of business leaders, community leaders together to talk about ways of building collaboration, talk about ways of addressing challenging issues. But unfortunately, our metropolitan core is struggling. Those of you in the city understand that maybe more than others. We've seen a population decline. We're seeing an enrollment decline in our school district. We're seeing increased concentrations of poverty that impact our schools, impact our courts, impact our social services and human services systems. And, of course, we are seeing neighborhood deterioration in crime. Our regional economy is affected because we can only be as strong as our core. The city of La Crosse is the site of almost 70% of all of the county's jobs. I dare say that every county board member in here represents people that work in La Crosse, own property in La Crosse, even if you don't happen to have a district that represents La Crosse. We are highly reliant on the successful economic engine that is the city of La Crosse, and approximately 60% of suburban workers commute to jobs in the city of La Crosse. The city of La Crosse obviously is the home of the region's essential institutions, UWL, Gunderson-Lutheran, Franciscan-Scamp, and some of our largest employers. And La Crosse is obviously the signature city. I hate to break it to anybody, but we will never be known as West Salem or Onalaska. We are known as La Crosse, and we really are reliant on what happens in the economic engine that is our community, our central signature city, La Crosse. And our entire region really should be concerned about the effect that our sprawling development pattern is having on our core. Again, you have statistics in your packet, and hopefully you've had a chance to read these. All the data is available if you would like that, but people are moving away from the central core. We know that. You know that if you represent areas outside the city, and you know that if you are elected to represent the city. As of 1998, there are more residents living outside of the city of La Crosse than in the city, which makes it more challenging to serve those with governmental services. In addition to that, families with children are moving out of the core. The school district of La Crosse is losing enrollment and consequently state aid, and as we read about their challenges in the paper to deal with budgets, to deal with consolidation and school issues, it becomes more and more challenging, even though they're our signature city and they have the largest number of students. It's still the economies of scale become more and more challenging, and I obviously don't have to lecture the school district on this, but as elected officials and appointed officials not representative of the school district, we may not recognize the kinds of challenges that they and their teachers are wrestling with. Our system of development and our system of government, with the number of organizations we have, the number of municipalities, is that the public sector tends to encourage sprawl through many policies and actions. We're consistently building and improving roads to accommodate and reduce commute times. We're building new opportunities for free parking so people can live elsewhere outside the city but be accommodated for coming to work in the city. We build new aesthetically appealing schools and other public facilities closer to sprawling developments. It's easier for young families to make decisions to locate closer to new schools than aging schools in aging neighborhoods. And we see a proliferating tax rate disparities among municipalities. I call it a rebate. You actually get a benefit by building or living somewhere else outside of the city of La Crosse because you get a discount on property taxes. Get many of the same services. You don't have to pay for them. You can come to work in the city of La Crosse and benefit from that by living outside the area, outside the city limits. Whoops. You do that. That's press escape. Yeah, there we go. And we've shared a lot of this data over the last 6-8 months. Again, this was Charlie Handy and the whole Planning and Zoning Department through a detailed analysis. We were shocked by the number of lots that are actually approved. With governmental approval, developers have created a glut of residential lots all across the county, and based upon a recent analysis by Planning and Land Information, there are over 2,400 vacant residential lots in the county. Over the past 3 years, we've issued an average of 313 single-family building permits, or about 8 years' worth of use. Now, that was over the last 3 years. I think I don't know if Charlie or Jeff are here. We're probably going of issuing new single-family permits about one-third that level. Depending upon how you look at the areas outside the city of La Crosse, we've got anywhere from a best-case scenario of 8 years of inventory, and we're getting new requests. Many months we end up getting new requests for platting new areas. I think we have one from Town of Onalaska coming up at our next cycle next week. We have, Brian, do you have the figure? What is it? I think it's up to, how many decades do we actually have of use at the current rate? We didn't get that on this slide. It's like several decades worth of lots that are out there available that are already platted, more than the market can end up using. So again, a young family moves into the community, gets a new job with one of our employers, they can get a rebate by moving in a property tax discount to move outside the city of La Crosse. The glut of vacant residential lots affects the basic economics of development. Supply of available lots is very high. Demand for lots is very low. So you can buy in a development that is very sparsely developed. When are you going to be able to sell that lot when 10 of the rest of the lots are undeveloped? You basically, when you have you're able to get in very affordably for buying a lot, but the resale is low because you've got such a glut of the total number of lots. Values are being pushed down and profits are disappearing. Developers and builders are watching this very well, very closely, because once they've platted out, say, a 15-lot development, if they only sell two or three lots and aren't able to sell the rest, guess where their profit is? Their profit is in the last two or three because of the infrastructure that's already been developed. This is challenging the ability of developers to be able to make a profit and stay in business. And guess what? We want developers to profit. We want builders to profit. That's how they stay in business. But in the kind of development patterns that we've approved, it limits the profits that people can make as developers and builders. It also ends up impacting severely the economic tax base of your central signature city. The situation is not good for anyone. Developers are losing their investment in subdivisions. Banks are losing their investment in projects. All these slides, by the way, could have been put up before the current housing glut, but it's even more so escalating right now. Lot owners are losing the value of their investment. Again, who do you resell to if the rest of the lots aren't selling in your subdivision? Government is finding it difficult and expensive to serve these sprawling residential developments, and we're going to touch on some of those statistics. This isn't just a story about the challenges in the city of La Crosse. It's countywide. It's the impact countywide and to each of our municipalities. Is this where the clicker doesn't work except when you do it? Okay, that's cool. We can do that. Growing tax rate disparities among municipalities will just end up catching up to everyone. Growing concentrations of poverty in our urban core, neighborhood deterioration and crime, increasing investment in infrastructure, challenging all of our municipalities to keep up because you never have enough tax base to be able to stay ahead of development or redevelopment in cities, specifically La Crosse, and an inability to meet demands for public services. I'm going to touch on a number of those in the next several slides. Again, there are a number of statistics in here that have shown this. We've heard, and certainly the city has had enough times that they've been criticized for the tax burden that's going on. This is just one example of what ends up happening, a growing tax rate disparity. This is the one that illustrates it the most severely. Back in 1989, there was almost no difference between the City of Onalaska tax and the City of La Crosse. Total tax, city, school district, WTC, everything in your property tax bill is about a 3% difference. Not a big change. For that home that was valued at $129,000 in 2008. By the way, these are specific homes that we went out and in 2008 identified homes that were valued equal $129,000 of value and then went back and researched their bills and actually went ahead then just 10 years. Currently, those same homes valued at the same amount, the La Crosse home will pay 52% more in property taxes. When you're a young family, when you're struggling for every dollar to make ends meet, you get that rebate by moving outside of the City of La Crosse when you're trying to afford a home. At the current projection into 2018, just 10 years ahead, that'll be 81% difference. And that's as if each home is really truly valued the same. I'm just using the values that we have on our property tax system right now between our two main largest cities. Many potential reasons for high property tax rate within the City of La Crosse, and I'm not going to criticize anybody or make excuses, but the fact is there are a number of things that impact the ability of the City of La Crosse to control property taxes, and it's becoming more and more difficult. There's an extraordinary percentage of tax-exempt property. We've heard about that. There may be inefficiencies in any organization, including the City of La Crosse, that they continue to work on, and that's what you're elected to work on. But there is a higher demand for public services, especially public safety, and there's less growth of the tax base within the signature city to be able to support that. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy when new development goes on outside the City of La Crosse and you're not capturing that. The economic engine that is our community, the City of La Crosse, is actually building tax base outside the City of La Crosse when they add jobs here. And they're not able to get the residential value that is where your newest tax base growth is. And by the way, about 70% of your entire county tax base is residential. If you're losing tax base growth by not getting in residential, you're not gaining it to pay for the services that you're taxing for. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it builds on itself. And that's the kind of challenge that our elected officials in the city council are really wrestling with, and your staff and your mayor. Next slide. While there is no doubt that the previous reasons are contributors, we believe that it's the sprawling development pattern is a leading cause for the issue. I'm not going to say it explains everything, but I've never seen statistics like this in the 25-plus years I've been in the public sector. Cost of government is spread over less residents with less tax base, and it tends to end up concentrating higher levels of property or lower levels of value in the existing neighborhoods. So you have less people wanting to buy property in those neighborhoods because of higher taxes. You have less reinvestment and more chances and reasons for people to convert ownership property into rental property and put less dollars into maintaining them. It often leaves more difficult populations to serve. People that are renters tend to have less investment in the community. That's not a criticism, but you get lower income people that move in looking for a lower cost place to rent. You have less investment. Again, it keeps building on itself and leaves dilapidated property and infrastructure and less ability for a city to reinvest in that infrastructure because you've got less tax base. Next slide. It concentrates poverty in those areas. It's illustrated by the percentage of students receiving free and reduced price meals. This is the easiest statistic you can get nationally that uses the same numbers to identify, and I've heard former Mayor Mettinger talk about, we have areas in our community that rival neighborhoods in Milwaukee as far as the percentage of poverty concentrations. That doesn't mean these are bad people. That doesn't mean that they don't deserve everything that they can get of the American dream, but they're more challenged when you have less economic resources, and it challenges the city, it challenges the county, and the school district. 77% of the Hamilton Elementary, 66% of Franklin Elementary, and it's even challenging where you end up having some bleed over or migration of urban poverty to outlying areas. Just in Onalaska School District, just in the last 8 years, in certain portions, it went up from 8.5% qualifying for free and reduced lunch to 23%. That's a significant growth. It ends up building on itself in other areas as well, whereas Holman, West Salem, and Bangor have been right around that 20% range. Concentrations of poverty tend to increase the rate of decline in communities and accelerate the formation of issues such as code violations and crimes. I'm trying to remember this slide. I can't. Can anybody else read that from here? I can't.
Number of arrests.
It's the number of arrests. Thank you. I didn't have that slide in front of me. But you see, obviously, the top line is La Crosse. It concentrates areas of behavior that end up contributing to crime and less safety for people, which, again, is a self-fulfilling prophecy when somebody's looking to locate a new family or find a place to upgrade. Next slide. So what's been happening to the schools and the school districts? Because obviously when families move out and they end up fulfilling the dream to live in another development or another community, for every school La Crosse is closed, other area districts have had to build new. So while we've had a growth of about 16,000 in total, or the total enrollment is 16,000, a growth of 5.9% over that 15-year period, we've also had building going on in the next slide, but the 5.9%, think about that, over 15 years, that's less than 0.5% a year. So all the schools countywide have grown by less than 0.5% a year. That's almost nothing. All we're doing is shifting where the growth is happening by our sprawling patterns. For every school La Crosse is closed, other area districts have had to build new, and over that period of time, our communities have invested over $120 million in addressing building new schools and new infrastructure. Again, while we're closing schools in the school district of La Crosse, someone else is building new. The bottom line is we've spent over $120 million in referenda while our enrollment has only increased by about 0.4% per year. Now, if we're all in one school district, we're all together, you wouldn't be shifting that type of thing around. But because of the number of municipalities and our sprawling development patterns, we're basically just shifting, well, not the deck chairs, but where people end up going, and we're just spending a lot of money to accommodate that. Next slide. As development sprawls throughout the county, it creates road funding issues. I've raised this many times, as more miles of roads to plow and maintain, roads that were not originally designed to handle that kind of amount of traffic, shortening their lifespan and increasing traffic problems. We just spent some time at Public Works just this afternoon talking with an area of seeing development on a rural road, OT, that never expected to have the kind of development that it has right now, of commercial development, a Quick Trip, a McDonald's, a hotel, that people are concerned about their safety. It's not ready to accommodate urban development, but that's what you've got on the border between, Holman and town of Onalaska. Okay? We get down to the county road study just completed in October of 2007. Supervisor Geary was reminding us that we haven't been able to fund all the priorities that we already have. In that issue, not adjusted for inflation, we have over $20 million of unmet road needs throughout the community outside the city of La Crosse that are demanding increased turn lanes, increased improvement, and that's not just keeping up with maintenance. Guess what? We don't have any way to tax people enough to be able to pay for that just within existing maintenance. And where do you raise taxes on if you're going to end up doing that? Back on the main cities, the urban areas. City of La Crosse, City of Onalaska, City of Holman will pay for most of the rural areas if you do it by property taxes. It hinders the ability of the county to provide a safe and effective road system. We can't turn a blind eye to safety challenges. We've got to deal with those, but we don't have a mechanism to actually pay for it. unless we raise vehicle taxes, which we haven't chosen to do, or we end up raising property taxes, which, guess what, we have a 3% levy limit. Why? Well, the state did that, and they don't pay for mandates. That's another long story that I'll... So it's a self-reinforcing cycle of urban decline. National research suggests that population loss is associated with lower property values, higher poverty rates, and more crime. It places greater strain on school districts, particularly the City of La Crosse School District. Ongoing enrollment decline could require school consolidation and impede community support for school district needs. I read that that's some of the things that the School District of La Crosse is wrestling with, and it spreads weakness to the regional economy. If we're raising and charging too high an amount of property taxes, it's not just on the residences. It impacts the competitiveness of those businesses that our constituents outside the City of La Crosse drive to. It continues to, again, be a spiral that we're not finding easy ways to deal with. Increased demand for services. Economists and urban experts agree that a region is only as strong as its urban core. If you own a home outside the City of La Crosse, the value of your home is impacted by the success of our signature city. The resale of your home, the value of the largest asset that you have as a family, is based on the health of this economy, which is driven by the central city. We cannot continue to make it financially and socially more attractive to develop in a pattern that is less efficient to serve. When we talk to many of the school districts outside this, the La Crosse School District, they're struggling with when are they going to have to build the next school? Do they have to raise taxes again to do that? And how do they end up being able to address that? It's going to lead to... that's all right. Go ahead. I'm depressing myself. It's time for regional leaders to come together and explore innovative solutions. This effort and trying to identify some of these challenges is really the outgrowth of your school district, your city staff, and your county staff trying to work together to identify what these challenges are and present various solutions to you, the elected policymakers, so you can help give us direction to try to end up addressing these. We continue to work together on a regular basis. You've got just a very great staff at the city and at the school district. I'm proud to work with them and try to come up with solutions. We're proud to be a part of that. But it's as beneficial to all of our districts, whether we're in the City of La Crosse or you represent areas outside of there. And I hope you'll recognize that as we go through here. This is not picking winners or losers. It's trying to say that we're not addressing the toughest challenges and the most difficult challenges we have as a community, and we need to roll up our sleeves and figure out ways to work together. And today is the continuation of the discussion we started at the collaboration conference to look for solutions and to recognize that whether you represent the City of La Crosse or you represent an area outside, we're all in this together, and we have more to gain by working together and finding solutions than to say it's a challenge between municipalities and oh, they'll sink or swim on their own. We all need to pull together. And again, so hopefully you're not too depressed. I wanted to end this on a little higher note. And next we're going to go through three separate presentations that are going to talk about a variety of different options that you can deal with. The first presentation will be with Carl Green, who's going to talk about cost containment in the city and how what are the limits of that in being able to actually deal with some of the cost disparities I talked about with property taxes. Doesn't mean you shouldn't save every dollar you can, don't misunderstand, but there's only so much you're able to do in a city with the kinds of challenges we said. We're going to talk about, we've talked about revenue sharing and those kinds of things that happen in other areas across the country and some of the other examples, and then presented by Larry Kurtz, your planner, and a place-based universal scholarship program that we've been studying across the nation that your superintendent is going to present. So hopefully there's some hope in this last slide, and but if you want to get more depressed, there is more detail in this actual document. So if there are any questions, I'll take them, but I think it's more important to actually get to the other presentations.
Yeah, let's hold questions until we get all the presentations in, because they may be answered by some of those presentations. So Carl, why don't you come forward?
Carl Green.
Well, again, I want to reflect what Steve said, and that I'm certainly not going to try to sit up here and say this is just how the cost should be handled at the City of La Crosse. In fact, by going through some of these numbers, I think it's pretty evident that it's such a systemic problem with the amount of tax base that the city of La Crosse has, that actually trying to cut tax rates enough to reduce this incentive for sprawl is simply unreachable. How much would, but I do want to walk through the exercise because I think it's helpful to illustrate, you know, just really how systemic of an issue that this is. How much would the city have to cut in expenses to reduce taxes enough to discourage the property tax incentive for urban sprawl? What I will be talking about is simply the local municipal portion, not all the others. And I could have gotten away saying I came up with this, but I also used this in the other presentation, so oops. In this county of La Crosse, it's interesting. There's the local municipal portion represents anywhere from 7% of the property tax bill in the town of Madary to the city of La Crosse, where it represents 45%. So there's a very wide fluctuation of how much of your tax bill is for your local municipal services. Just to, you know, obviously you guys all probably know about this, but what is the levy? It's the total annual cost to be covered by the taxpayers. It's not the expenses. It's the difference between your annual expenditures and your annual revenues, because every department has some form of way, generally, of raising some form of revenue. Well, generally, their expenditures are much higher, and therefore, that portion is what's called the total levy, and that's what's spread across the taxpayers. The levy is assessed against every real property based on each property's proportional assessed value, as I talked about in the presentation before. So in 2008, what was the levy for La Crosse? Well, and by the way, the 2008 levy pays the 2009 budget, and unfortunately, since this presentation has been put together, the city has passed another budget just because of the budget cycle, so we're looking at year-old numbers, but these numbers still hold true. The city of La Crosse's 2009 annual expenditures were $68.7 million, but they were actually able to not buy taxes, generate revenues, different types of fees, service charges, things like that, intergovernmental cooperation agreements, things, and that tallied $34.7 million. So the difference, but however, we can't forget about the TIF increment, which represents $2.2 million. That would be added on to that expenditures, because all the dollars that would be going towards paying the different different taxing entities is going to pay off the debt that was funding the public infrastructure improvements. But that represents about 6.65% of the total value of La Crosse in TIF. The maximum requirement, or the maximum level of how much value you can have in TIF, is 12%. So the city of La Crosse is actually right about in the middle, and I'll actually show you with comparable municipalities how they rate. So therefore, once you go through all the calculations, the total city levy for the 2009 budget was $36.2 million that needed to be covered by the city taxpayers. The annual levy, the mill rate, therefore, is just a calculation between the division of the annual levy by the annual assessed value. The annual levy is $36.2 million. We had $2.933 billion of assessed value in the city of La Crosse. And so, therefore, that represents a mill rate of $12.36 per 100,000 of assessed value. So how much would the city have to cut in expenses to reduce taxes enough not to encourage urban sprawl? Well, the city is at $12.36 per thousand. Our next highest in the county is Onalaska, and they're at $6.01. Again, this is 2008 numbers. If La Crosse were to equal Onalaska's mill rate, so that you could move to La Crosse, you could move to Onalaska, your taxes would be the same, it would require a 51% reduction. If we were to try to reduce down to what the Village of Holman is, which they're at $4.59 per thousand, La Crosse would have to do a 63% cost reduction. If we were to reduce around Shelby or West Salem, which is in the 3.5 to 3.8, it would be about a 70% cost reduction in services. And Madary, which is the lowest in the county at 0.77 per thousand, would require a 94% cost reduction in the city of La Crosse. But there's certain things that we can't just cut from the city budget, and you guys from the city all know this. Debt service, you can't just stop paying debt service. And do we really want to cut police and fire? I don't think that, you know, any time that we, you know, I'm a City of La Crosse resident. I think we've got excellent police services in this city. I feel very safe in this city, and I certainly don't want to see the police system cut. Fire department, same thing. You know, I think especially as you have older homes, you've got a greater potential for fires. It's certainly not something that we want to cut. And by the way, there was something passed in 2009, Wisconsin Act 28, which prohibited the cuts to these departments, to police and fire, that is, below the 2009 spending levels. Between police, fire, and debt in the City of La Crosse, that represents 52% of their operating expenses. So if we can't cut from this 52%, how much can we cut from the remaining 48% to get us down to the surrounding municipalities' levels? We could cut 100% of all programs other than police, fire, and the debt service, and we would drop the mill rate by 48%. To equal Onalaska's mill rate, though, we needed a 51% reduction. We just can't even do it. If we did a 51% reduction, which we can't, we would have no IT department, we would have no HR department, there would be no library or city attorney, there would be no mayor's office, and there would be no parks and recs department. That's just some of the departments. So how much should the city cut based on this the 2009 budget? Well, the current mill rate is $12.36 per thousand. If we were to reduce to an $11 per thousand mill rate, it would require a 27% reduction to all these departments aside from police, fire, and debt. If we were to reduce down to $10, now remember, we're trying to get to six, at least six, but that's our next, our lowest or our highest competitor. A reduction to $10 per thousand means a 40% reduction to all departments. And a reduction to $9 per thousand means a 56% reduction to all departments, again, excluding police, fire, and then what's required for debt service. Why does the local urban municipal difference encourage urban sprawl? Let's look at just that portion of the tax bill for the City of La Crosse resident. They have a $100,000 house. They pay $1,236 in local municipal tax, $12.36 per thousand, $100,000 house, that's $1,236. That's $103 in monthly escrow, or about a tenth of a percent of the home's value. So how much house could you purchase in the surrounding municipalities of La Crosse County to have a comparable monthly escrow account? And this figure just baffles me. You could have a $1.6 million house in the town of Madary, and the local municipal portion that you would be paying would be the same. It would be $103 in a monthly escrow, or about 6/100ths of the home value. In Madary, you can have a 16 times more house for the same tax price of the local municipality. This, I think, is also very key. We hear a lot about the amount of non-taxable land in the City of La Crosse. Now, there is a lot of non-taxable land in the City of La Crosse, but I question if we have more than Appleton or Janesville or Oshkosh or some of these comparable communities that are sort of the signature community around all the urban areas. So when I pulled this out, it kind of gave me a little bit of an aha moment. This is the municipally owned, owner-occupied values as of 2000. So this is from the 2000 census. These are all the school districts, or all the municipalities in the school district of La Crosse. So we've got Shelby, Campbell, Madary, Greenfield, and La Crosse. Each color represents a different amount of house value and what portion of that municipality has that type of house value in it. So to give you an example, blue is homes that as of 2000 were valued under 50,000. So the City of La Crosse had about 8% of their housing stock as $50,000 or less. Greenfield was a little bit lower, still under 5. Madary is very minimal. Campbell is about the same as La Crosse, and Shelby is next to nothing. But then you look at 50 to 100,000. Shelby's got 30% of their housing stock is less than 100,000 in value. The City of La Crosse, 70% of their housing stock is less than 100,000 in value. So how do you spread that tax levy over that small of a tax base? You can see that we by no means have the largest percentage as you get higher, but of other values, you know, the light green is 100,000 to 150,000, the purple is 150,000 to 200,000, and then the other segments are 200,000 and up. But you can see that these surrounding municipalities by far have larger tax base per person, per capita. How does TIF affect the city's residents and the mill rate? TIFs are supposed to facilitate development. If you didn't have the TIF, you wouldn't have the development. But for argument's sake, let's pretend that all the $195.2 million increment was created without having to create TIF. How much would that make of a difference on La Crosse's mill rate? The $36.3 million would decrease by $2.2 million, or 6.24%, and your $12.36 would become $11.55. So the argument that our TIF is what's giving us the high taxes, I don't necessarily buy that. A $100,000 house would save about $86 a year if we had no TIF. $86 a year. Does the city have too much TIF? Well, here is the city of La Crosse's amount of TIF, and on the left-hand side, we see a percentage. So here is at 9%. Remember, 12% is the statute limit. And depending on the year, this is from 1990 through 2006, and depending on the year and the equalized value, this fluctuates in what TIFs are closed and what TIFs are opens. But we're anywhere from 3.5 to just over 5. This is, now, excuse me, let me back up for a second. All I had data for was through 2006. The number I gave you was that they were at 6.6%. So that's the reason that 6.6% isn't represented. The data doesn't go up to 2008, just in case somebody caught that. This is Eau Claire, and this is how they compare annually with us. So they're a little bit lower than us. Wausau, which is kind of hard to read, but you can see there this yellow line that kind of goes up off to the top there. Here is Oshkosh, which is the light blue, which is hard to read again, but again, as of the last probably 3 or 4 years, they were higher. That is Appleton. That is Fond du Lac. That is Sheboygan. That is Janesville. So you'll see of comparable municipalities, we're really kind of in the middle as far as the amount of TIF that we had. So really, to conclude, cost reduction, you know, it obviously there's always ways that we can reduce our costs. But to reduce costs enough to reduce the urban sprawl issue, we can't do it. And it would require major reductions just to see minimal drops in the mill rate. Remember, 27% reduction in all departments just to get down to $11. The city of La Crosse can't reduce taxes through expense reduction adequately enough to eliminate the urban sprawl. And the city's TIF policy is comparable with Wisconsin cities. You know, looking at comparables with other municipalities, there's obviously, like I said, areas that could be cut, reduced, but and some of the things I found, the city did lead some categories in cost per department. But I think the overall message is that cost reduction is not a way to get out of the issue with this urban sprawl. It just simply can't occur. That's it.
Thank you, Carl. So if the answer is not how to slice the pie a lot smaller, what we need to do basically is to grow the pie, and I think that's what Larry's going to help talk about.
I am. What kind of pie are we going to have?
Any kind you want.
All right. I asked Brian to do something weird here, but I wanted to show my last slide first because my dad used to teach public speaking, and he said you got to tell them what you're going to tell them. So this is what I'm going to tell you, is that national research has shown that overall regional growth rates tend to be greater in metropolitan areas where the central city economy was the strongest. So, Steve, can we grow the pie? And then some group, somebody, needs to take the lead in moving the community forward with some regional perspective here, and that's really what I'm going to talk about tonight. And there are the other thing to leave you with is there's lots of other communities that have figured out a way to do regional cooperation, do regional economic development cooperation, and regional tax-based sharing. So now I'm going to go back to the beginning. Thank you very much, Brian. Or I can be done. If you want me to be done, I can be done. All right. Here we go. As we saw in the depressing report that Steve O'Malley gave us, that our development pattern is making local government less efficient. That's probably happening at the city level, the county level, and maybe at the village and township level as well. Wisconsin is set up this way. It's kind of a holdover from how Wisconsin and a lot of cities are set up, is that the way we're set up is that we are forced to compete for tax base for economic development. And we try to recruit higher income residents and businesses. So again, we're all competing for the same tax base. If we cooperate, I think it's shown that regions that work together, again, actually can grow their pie. So the city, we're left behind in this competition because we have to deal with older housing stock, we have aging infrastructure, and of course, because we're the central city, we're not apologizing for that, but we do have a higher percentage of folks that need social services. The county certainly is well aware of that, and we are as well. So economies of communities are increasingly interconnected as more people live in one community and work in the other. As was said before, 70% of the folks in the county work in the city as the central city and the employment center. We're the cultural center of the region. We think we are the region's identity. We are the major metropolitan city here. At the 2006 collaborative conference, we brought in David Russ because you wouldn't listen to us, so we always have to bring in an expert to tell you what we already know. So the city and the county jointly paid for David Rusk. David Rusk was the mayor of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I believe Chevy Chase, Maryland, had at one time. But he came and presented to the collaboration conference, and his conclusion was is that, and he gave all sorts of examples of how regions that work together. He talked about Buffalo, New York. Buffalo, New York is a very impoverished city, but the region is very healthy because everybody moved out. So if you could capture the economic base, if you will, of the region. If we acted at a region, they said Buffalo's bond rating would probably be AAA, but it's probably less than a B minus or something. So if we start working together, this is not just a La Crosse phenomenon, is the point here, is that cities around the country are struggling, central cities, and we see this pattern over and over and over again. And again, hopefully have some examples here where there are solutions out there that we can help solve this. So inclusionary zoning, what does that mean? A lot of communities like what they call large lot zoning. They don't want us to move out there, so they create these large lots. There'll be bigger houses. They'll get all the tax base. You could call it cherry picking. Farmland, the county's moving very well on this PACE program. Very excited to see the state and the county's work on that, farmland preservation. And this multi-jurisdictional compact concept. It's an anti-sprawl land use planning concept, unified form of economic development, because we're not competing with Onalaska. La Crosse is not competing with Onalaska. We do because of the way the Wisconsin is set up, but we're really competing with cities and regions outside of Wisconsin. That's who we compete with, not each other. And this whole concept of tax-based sharing, we'll have lots of examples of that. So in his book, Cities Without Suburbs, he talks about the problems that many urban areas face as a result of economic segregation, sprawling development patterns. The way to attack these is through regional cooperation because these affect us all. The idea, I think, the takeaway from Steve's slide is that, and you see this all over the place, of the central city, the poverty issues do start creeping into the suburbs, and that's why they call them first ring suburbs in Cleveland and Chicago, because you do see poverty move out to the outlying areas. So this does affect us all. So what does a compact look like? It has anti-sprawl land use planning, some unified economic development program, a tax-based sharing component. And a compact would address many of these things that were talked about in the challenging trends. It issued, Steve talked about, just the cost of roads. That's only one aspect of how you serve sprawling development patterns. And I could step outside here, the talk here, and talk about how developers come, and we tell them it's going to take 12 minutes for the fire department to get there. And so it's a development in the town of Shelby, and it's at the end of a three-mile dead-end road, and West Salem has to serve it, and it's going to take 12 minutes for the fire truck to get there. So that's not very efficient. I guess you can choose to live there, you can choose to pay the low taxes, but it's very difficult to provide urban services in many of these coulees. So we need to cooperate. We need to provide, hope that development happens where you can deliver urban services. And obviously, as a planner, I would say that planning is important. You have to have a regional vision. In Wisconsin, we can compete with other regions. That's really what we should be talking about. In Wisconsin, these other economic regions have emerged, a Thrive organization. We have LADCO here. That's a countywide organization. M7 is probably a three-county area. New North, I think, is a 5 to 7 county area that they're saying, we're not competing, you know, Green Bay versus other communities in the Green Bay. We're competing with some other community in another state. So how do we remove the motivation to provide excessive incentives? A lot of times, and we've seen this here at the city and the county, and we see it in Sparta all the time. Well, we're going to move to Sparta if you don't do this for us. So we keep upping the ante to what we give the developer, and who pays? The taxpayer pays, because all of a sudden we're in a competition, really a race to the bottom of who can provide the biggest incentive to help you move your business where you want to go. And then at the end of the day, 20 years from now, you'll go shop around for the next development deal. So the fiscal glue that holds two pieces of compact together is, while development would be directed towards the areas that are most efficient to serve, all municipalities would share in the revenue benefits. And we have some case studies here. This is the first study that we did, so this isn't the first time this has been talked about. We looked at this metro pattern, and we basically used Myron Orfield, who's a legislator from Minnesota, wrote a book about Wisconsin, how Wisconsin communities compare the central city versus the region. We looked at social and economic data, the separation, the free and reduced lunches. We documented that in 2005. Again, the city of La Crosse called for some discussion of regional cooperation, and again, we were not very good salesmen because nobody took us up. But then in 2006, the county came back and said, hey, let's get David Rusk here. Let's keep talking about regional cooperation. If we talk about it enough, maybe we'll actually do it. So we talked about this whole tax disparity, tax capacity issue, and that basically I'm telling you the same data in 2005 is the same data that Steve showed you, is that as our tax capacity as the city is going down because of the slide that Carl just showed you, that because most of our houses are valued at less than, what, $100,000. So our tax capacity isn't there. So regional tax-based sharing could get us to a point where we're providing, we're not competing against each other for this tax base. Here's some case studies very quickly. The Twin Cities, this has been around for a long time, Racine, Ohio, and out in Colorado. So the Twin City model is, in essence, is a result that's put together by the Metropolitan Council. They have a formula that basically goes to this notion again that economic decline started to creep into the inner ring suburbs. When poverty is seen just as an inner city problem, it has no political legs. It's when poverty becomes a suburban problem that you can get something to do politically, and that's what former legislator Myron Orfield said. So what is the Tax Fiscal Disparities Act 1971? Again, they've been at this for a long, long time. So it's 7 counties, 186 cities. They each contribute to the pie, if you will, and 40% of the increase in their value. So again, what this does is it simply takes away this whole regional competition that we have to go recruit. We have to have Blaine go compete with South St. Paul. It just doesn't happen anymore. That, again, the idea is if all the rising tide will lift all ships. So basically everybody throws into a pie, into the pie, it gets redistributed, tax revenues based on a need-based formula that considers population and tax capacity. So it has reduced tax-based disparity in the Twin Cities, and their model isn't perfect, but it's led to more equitable taxation. And one anecdote here is that the suburbs really don't like this because they have to contribute to Minneapolis or St. Paul. But over time, when Minneapolis-St. Paul, those inner cities, parts of their inner cities turn around, they become a donor to the outlying municipalities, and that is starting to happen in Minneapolis. Racine County, the city of Racine was providing water and sewer outside to its surrounding communities. Racine is just like a La Crosse or a Janesville or a Beloit. There's 11 metro cities in the state of Wisconsin. And all of them are, that's why this metro pattern, the reason we did the metro pattern study is because Myron Orfield did that for Racine, Kenosha, Janesville, Beloit, Eau Claire. They didn't do it for La Crosse. So we took his methodology and applied it to La Crosse, ended up with the exact same result, is that our tax base was declining, its tax rate was 2 to 6 times higher surrounding communities, city and suburbs entered into a tax sharing agreement in 1999. So it can be done in Wisconsin, I think it can be done here. So again, they contribute a portion of their base rate, if you will, and a portion of their annual growth in industrial and commercial tax base, then redistributed based on community tax capacity. Racine receives most of the payment of the pool, spends the revenues on redeveloping its aging infrastructure, reclaiming urban brownfields, and upkeep and expansion of regional amenities. So there was something in it that the suburban communities had to buy into, was a regional facility like a library, zoo, et cetera. The goal is that eventually the city will be able to lower its tax rate, will be able to reduce the tax sharing payments it receives from the surrounding communities. And again, the notion that Racine is the regional identity. Dayton, Ohio. This one's another twist on it. Again, faced with significant population economic development decline, fierce competition over tax base within the county. The county was the leadership role here, created this community cooperation task force. They created this joint tax base sharing economic development government equity plan in 1992. And this was a voluntary program. They signed on for an initial period of 9 years. 29 of the 30 cities, villages, and towns signed on. Two interrelated funds, a government equity fund. So a portion of increased property and income tax revenues from economic growth, similar to Minneapolis, St. Paul area, in the participant municipalities are shared with the fellow program participants. Then this economic development fund, again, to get away from competing with each other, a separate fund using countywide sales tax. The fund provides competitive grants to participating municipalities for economic development projects that have area-wide impacts. So again, there were some regional projects of regional significance, if that's what you want to call them, baseball team, Center Point, 70, Commerce Park, et cetera. Again, it's been expanded now beyond the 9 years. So another case study. Denver. Poster child of regional cooperation, tax revenue sharing throughout through the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District. They have a non-compete agreement for recruiting businesses. Again, this is something the city tried in 2005. Nobody took us up on it, that we weren't going to try to steal jobs from your community. And then the RTA, which we've heard a lot about. Eau Claire has one now. We don't, so we got to catch up with Eau Claire, but we got to get RTA. And then Metro. This Economic Development Corporation, it's the nation's first truly regional economic entity, economic development. 70 cities, counties, the economic development agencies all cooperate under this Economic Development Corp, similar to our LADCO. Each partner is committed to the economic vitality of the entire region. They all communicate Metro Denver first. They talk about Metro first, then they talk about their own community. This is just a... their website. So if you ever want to go look at, see what they're doing in Denver, this is their website. Again, all these slides are on the county system. The Denver COG, it's a nonprofit of local governments dedicated to protecting, enhancing the quality of the region. They have the Metro Mayor's Caucus, a neutral arena for exchange of ideas on issues that affect the entire region, air quality, water use, growth, transportation. This cultural facilities district, 7-county revenue sharing agreement to support cultural amenities that benefit the region. Metro Sports Commission, again, creating, you've seen what they've done in Denver with Coors Field, those types of things, and that is economic development as well. So they have this mile-high compact. So we're getting back to the original discussion here. Can there be a compact? These other communities in Wisconsin, it's under a revenue sharing agreement under a state statute. Here they have a compact signed in Metro Denver, that growth and development decisions can impact neighboring jurisdictions and the region, and that you have to have a regional framework for these, how a region will work. There's a regional commitment to planned growth. Again, we talk about anti-sprawl development patterns, orderly extension of public services, protection of the environment, economic vitality, and overall quality of life. So again, I come back to the beginning, which is every region in the country is dealing with this. And again, typically we thought of ourselves as these older Rust Belt, put that back up there, Brian, if you can. Oh, he left. There he is. Anyway, this is, again, this phenomenon isn't just in La Crosse, that there's sprawling development patterns, that we can't get along, we're always fighting with each other, but it's how we're set up. It's not anybody's fault. We fight with each other because we compete for the upper social strata, because they build the higher houses, but it all gets back to tax base. We're always fighting over tax base. So if we can come up with a system that levels the playing field and have us function as a region, again, you got to get to this notion that we're not competing with West Salem, we're competing with Dayton, Ohio, or maybe not the Twin Cities, but regions, economic regions of our size. And again, David Rusk pointed that out to us. So we'll save questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. One of the ideas that was thrown out during these discussions is this concept of the Universal Place-Based Scholarship Program. And Jerry Kember is going to talk to us about how that could work.
Everybody needs a break, I think. Boy, that's a lot of information to give everybody in one evening. So I have some very positive information to give you, and I think you'll enjoy this. So I'll do my best. I really need to use the mic and stand behind the podium. Yes? Because are you recording? Ah, okay. I don't like podiums and I don't like mics, so I'll deal with it. Maybe you don't either. Okay, a place-based universal scholarship program. Now, I apologize. I see a lot of faces in the room. People have heard about this idea before, but I got to admit, every time I do this presentation, I learn something more from it. So I hope you learn something more from it tonight as well. It is a potential economic development tool that would actually address every one of the issues that you heard Steve talk about. And that's a pretty exciting idea. There's not too many solutions that address every factor that we're talking about. Something that you may or may not be aware of, I'm not sure how much Steve talks about it or the mayor talks about it at city council or your county board meetings, but I have kept the school board informed about it. We have a city, school district, county collaboration. And that is the mayor, myself, and the county administrator who get together quarterly with the leadership from those three organizations. Our belief is those three organizations, the city, the school district, and the county, tax the same people. And so if we're able to put our resources together, put our heads together, maybe we can together, jointly, work to reduce taxes, share resources, and do better business for everybody in this area. So we do that. We address local issues. We try to strengthen that collaboration and communication between those organizations. So we aren't all going to referendums at the same time, looking at the shared issues that we share and how can we address them. So a lot of this came out of that collaboration. We meet quarterly. We have a purchasing group. We have a client services group. We have a IT group, all looking at how can we share our resources and lower, and maybe all of you don't realize, we buy gasoline together. We buy paper products together. We do those things to keep our taxes as low as we can. So it's been an important collaboration and really has some impressive results. Some of this you've already seen from Steve's presentation, but I'm going to reiterate a little bit of this. He told you that the student population of our whole region has only grown 5.9% in the last 15 years. That is next to nothing. That isn't even considered growth. But what's interesting is in La Crosse schools, we've had a 12% decrease, while in Holman schools, we've had a 44% increase. So what does that mean? Well, we've all had to go to referendum, either to build new buildings or to replace the buildings that we have. We've had total referenda in that 15-year period of about $120 million. And all we've done is move the situation around. The end result is, you heard Steve say, for every school that Holman or Onalaska has built, we've closed. All we're doing is taking the same kids, putting them in another building. And I got to tell you, the Superintendent Holman doesn't like the idea of going to referendum any more than I do, any more than the Superintendent West Salem and so on. That's not a pleasant thing to have to do, to ask people to raise their taxes to support their schools. Luckily, we have a region that does support their schools, and so we have been successful to the tune of about $120 million. But all we've done is have a very minimal increase in school revenue because those students bring state aid. So the revenue is increased just marginally, while at the same time we've had a huge expense to the taxpayers. In fact, in Holman, their school district mill rate is close to La Crosse right now. I don't know if you realize that. So it's about education. This solution that we're talking about is about educational attainment. It's about the fact that 64% of the people that live in our county don't have a higher degree, an associate's degree from college or higher. That is a huge detriment to this whole region. Only 36% of the people living in the county have an associate's degree or higher. And what's too bad about that is the jobs that are growing are the jobs that have at least an associate's degree or higher. So job growth is where the degrees are, but we don't have the people with the degrees, at least compared to other areas like Minneapolis and those areas. So we're talking about a place-based universal scholarship. What does that mean? Place-based. We're talking about a defined geographic area, and in this case, the school district of La Crosse. By universal, we mean it's available to all students, regardless of merit and regardless of need. It's not about trying to help people in poverty to get to college, although it will. It's not about high excellence in kids to get to college. It's not about merit, which most scholarships are based on one or the other. It's either merit or need or a combination of the two. We're not talking about that at all. We're talking about universal. In other words, if you graduate from high school, you're entitled to a scholarship. Yes, you have to graduate successfully from high school, and yes, you have to do good enough work to get accepted to college, and yes, when you get to college, it's most important that you graduate and get a degree. If we're really going to make a difference, it's not enough to just get kids to college. We've got to get them through college and into a degree program. What's happened across the nation in other cities, Kalamazoo being the shining example, in 2005, they've now become known in the state of Michigan as an education community, a community that's totally focused on higher education and improving the workforce by doing that. What happened in Kalamazoo is now happening in some other areas. El Dorado, Arkansas has a very similar program to Kalamazoo. The Pittsburgh Promise is very different from El Dorado, and the Denver Scholarship Foundation is different again. There are about 12 cities across the country that are now looking at Promise programs and the kind of difference that it could make in their region. So they're working on this. Actually, there's an annual PromiseNet conference, which we've gone to for the last 2 years, to look at what are the possibilities for La Crosse. So let me tell you just a little bit more about what happened in Kalamazoo. What they do is they provide full tuition to every child graduating from Kalamazoo High School to any state school in the state of Michigan. But it has to be a public school. It's made a huge reversal in the downward trend of enrollment in the school district. I'm going to show you a chart about that in a minute. And it's for the first time really, truly made college a real possibility for every child in that school district. I know the former superintendent there, Janice Brown, you're going to see a quote from her a little bit later on. But Janice talks about how it changed the entire culture of their school district. Imagine kindergartners, teachers, parents of those kindergartners understanding if you do well in school, if you graduate from high school, the tuition and the funding will be there for you to go to college. In a lot of our homes, college isn't talked about because parents know it's not a reality. It's not a real possibility for their child. This would change all that. At least it changed it in Kalamazoo. Here's the enrollment, the way it changed in Kalamazoo. I'm going to try to use the pointer there, but if you look over here, in 1997, they had about 12,000 students, just a little over 12,000 students. As you see, from 1997 to 2005, they were in steady decline, and something needed to be done. And so they were in a much a more grim situation than anything we've heard tonight, actually. Their economy was based on the auto industry, on steel manufacturing, and on manufacturing, and things were going downhill fast. In 2005, right here, the Kalamazoo Promise was announced. In other words, offering tuition to a state school of their choice to every graduate from Kalamazoo High School. Look what's happened in the last 3 years. From 2005 to 2008, what took them 8 or 9 years to lose, they have regained in 3 years in school population enrollment, which has a lot of economic bearing, which they didn't even anticipate, which was kind of interesting. There's a yard sign. Realtors that get excited when they see this sign. There's a yard sign of a home sold in Kalamazoo. But there's two signs there, if you'll notice. One that says it was sold, but look at the sign over here. College tuition qualified. In other words, buy this home, live here, we're going to provide a tuition for your child to go to college. What a tremendous incentive to sell a home. The taxable values of homes rose more than expected. In fact, I looked at the book, and there is a book written on the subject. It rose 7% in the first year. Okay, now sometimes our senior citizens say, I don't want my house to raise in value because then my taxes will go up. But no, this is different. Everybody's value went up. So what it does, it spreads, it thins out the tax responsibility of everybody and actually lowers your taxes. I think you got some of that when you heard Carl describe earlier about assessed values and equalized values. This rises the tide for everyone. So yes, you do want the value of your property to go up. You don't want the value of your property to go down. I think most of us understand that. This is an interesting thing that happened in Kalamazoo that they didn't anticipate at all. Two-thirds of the kids graduating from Kalamazoo High School actually stayed in Kalamazoo. I mean, figure it out. It didn't take long for them to say, well, gee, I get my tuition paid for, but guess what? If I live with Mom and Dad, I got my room and board taken care of, and Mom will do the laundry on the weekends. This is good. This is good living. So two-thirds of the kids stayed right there, and they saw tremendous growth. They have 1 4-year school in Kalamazoo, 1 4-year college, and they have 1 2-year technical college. We're in better shape. We have 2 4-year colleges and a technical college. What happened then was this economic growth took off that they didn't anticipate. So now they're not only becoming an education community, but they're finding that the economy is growing in the area as well. Imagine if you were a local employer, if you could say to when you're recruiting for people to come to your town, guess what, come here, live here, your kid's college will be paid for. Pretty nice attractor to a city, and that's what it's done for Kalamazoo. In fact, just this past year, an $80 million corporation now announced that they're moving to Kalamazoo because they like the idea of an education community, what it would do for their workforce, what it does for the local economy, and they want to be part and parcel of a community that values education. Oh boy, now it's not going to work. Can you flip? Oh, there we go. All right. Another city has taken off with this called El Dorado, Arkansas. And they announced theirs in 2007. It's very similar to what they did in Kalamazoo. They saw the same kind of immediate positive growth both in the community and their public schools. And this is something that I've talked about for over 30 years in my educational career, is trying to help people recognize the economic connection between good public schools and the vitality of your local community. It's huge. But to have something like Kalamazoo and El Dorado, something tangible that the realtors can see, the local business people can see, the community can see, the whole state looks at Kalamazoo as the education community. Now Arkansas looks at El Dorado as the education community in the state of Arkansas. Here's what happened in El Dorado. It's a little bit different. It doesn't look as great as Kalamazoo because something happened. If I get the pointer to work here, this goes back to the 99-2000 school year. Here's what their enrollment was. They were on a steady decline. Well, then guess what happened? They consolidated with another school district. So they did a union school consolidation. Well, sure, they got that immediate bump, but look, it didn't take long. Look what started happening again. They started dropping again. Well, that's when the El Dorado Promise was announced, and now they're on a steady growth pattern again. So these things are working in another community. We have the data, we have the results. Union County, which is where El Dorado is, now 4% doesn't sound impressive. That was the first year of the El Dorado Promise. Their home values went up, home sales went up 4%, but that's pretty amazing. When the state of Arkansas, home sales went down 9%. So that's really a 13% difference in 1 year. Then, because things were going so well, they created an organization called El Dorado Forward, and now they're building a convention center because things are growing so fast in El Dorado. Very positive difference. Their community college in El Dorado, I don't have the data for Kalamazoo and their community college, but in the first year, the community college enrollment grew 16%. So I'm expecting a similar thing happen with people deciding, hey, I'll live at home and have everything paid for, not only my tuition, but my room and board. In Pittsburgh, they're doing something. This was really spearheaded by the local hospitals in Pittsburgh. They generated a $10 million grant to get it started. But their focus was about reversing the population, school enrollment declines, as you can see, are doing better with completion rates of high school, college preparedness and such, and creating that workforce that is so important to having a good local economy. Theirs has just begun. We don't have data on that one. Theirs is only a year old, so they're kind of newbies at this. Then Denver's also done a similar program. Their mission's a little bit different than what we would be looking at here. They're looking at only their highest poverty areas and providing scholarships to kids who are in those specific schools. What's interesting, it's all funded by community leaders, private donors. By the way, if you're wondering how the other ones are funded, the one in Kalamazoo, there were three donors that visited with a school superintendent. This would be my favorite day of my life if this ever happened to me. But the donors said, what can we do? And Janice Brown came up with the idea. Actually, her first idea that she did, she told me this, I met with her last summer. She did an 80-page report of what she could do, and the donors looked at it and they go, oh, Janice, just throw that away. Tell us what you need. So they came up with a tuition idea. And what they do is those students in Kalamazoo, they hand in their tuition statements to the Kalamazoo Promise. These three donors write a check each year for whatever that costs. Wouldn't that be wonderful? We're not looking for something like that. As wonderful it would be, who knows, maybe somebody will step up in my office. Does everybody know where my office is? Do you know how to get there? I'll write out directions for anybody that wants it. But anyhow, but then in El Dorado, the local oil company is paying the full ticket on that one. In Pittsburgh, it was the hospitals. And in Denver, it's just community leaders and private donors that are making it happen. And as I said before, it's targeted to highest poverty schools. The most interesting thing about what they did in Denver is something we're interested in here. As you heard me say earlier, it's not enough to get them to college. It's not enough to pay their tuition. Because really, you've thrown your money in the river if they don't finish college. It was a waste of money then. So they created future centers in Denver. And what these are, as Brian likes to describe them, they're like a guidance counselor on steroids. Okay, it's a guidance office that their total focus is preparing kids for college, making sure they make good course selections, a good college selection, making sure they apply for a lot of good scholarships, and that they get there and that they're successful. So the future centers have been really an exciting idea, and one of the ideas we would be interested in if we were to pursue something like this. That's their focus. Scholarships are a good investment, but they're only good if the kids are ready for college and are successful in college. So I asked the question, what about a La Crosse Promise? They did it in El Dorado. They did it in Kalamazoo. They're doing something like it in Pittsburgh, something a little bit different in Denver. And here's something I'll say to that. Of all the cities that are looking at this kind of a program, every one of them is different. And you funded a study to be done, a feasibility study. The county funded it. The city counted it. Funded it, and the school district funded it, along with 13 other businesses and organizations in the community. We quickly raised $31,000, which wasn't the full cost of the study. The study was actually less, so we actually have a fund balance, if you will, to do some other things if we choose to move forward. But what about a La Crosse Promise? The feasibility study was actually that you funded was completed in 2009. As you heard me say, the city, the county, and the school district, along with 13 other businesses and organizations, bought into the idea. I got to tell you, I never had an easier fundraiser than this. I picked up the phone. We each had our 10 people we were supposed to call. I got some of the banks. I picked up the phone and just briefly described the idea, and they said, you know, we'll put $1,000 towards that. We would love to see that happen. So the generating that idea went really fast, and it was easy to raise the money. We picked the W.E. Upjohn Institute. As you're all public people and care about the public, we were very upfront. We did an RFP. We looked at several different research groups to do this. We picked W.E. Upjohn because they're actually located in Kalamazoo. And they have been studying what's gone on in Kalamazoo. They know what's going on in the other communities. So rather than talk to somebody in Madison or Milwaukee and try to bring them up to speed, we thought it was simpler to bring a group on that was already deep into this idea. They did a study that included all these things, and we do have copies, and I'm not sure if the study in full, where's Brian, is that available online? Or?
Yeah, it's on the county website.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a glimpse of what the study, but the full study is available to you that want to go deeper. We looked at the strengths and weaknesses of the area. That's pretty much what you heard, the challenges that you heard Steve talk about. We talked to them about every city's doing a different model because every city's trying to address different needs. You heard the needs that we're trying to address. So what model would work well in the city of La Crosse? We looked at how much it would cost to implement such a program, what would be the economic and fiscal impact if we did such a thing, and what would happen if we do nothing? Some of the trends that we saw before, I think, would tell you what if we do nothing, what can happen. And then if we were to do this, what would be the next steps to implement this? So they did all this information for us, and here's some of the recommendations that they made. And these are the recommendations not from us. These are recommendations from the Upjohn Institute. They said that what's interesting is that you are actually in a more positive situation than they were in Kalamazoo. One of their first reactions when they visited, they spent several days here and they toured around the city. They sat down with us in the school district, went over all our data. The city did the same, the county did the same, and they said, well, you know, it's not that bad here. And we said, no, it's not that bad here, but we see the trend and we want to get out in front of it and be proactive and make a difference before we see some of these trends continue. So they said, well, you know, that really puts you in a very positive position for action, much more positive position than Kalamazoo or the others. And the other thing that they really focused on, they said, of the 12 cities that we're looking at, that are looking at this, nobody, you're the only one that has the city, the county, and the school district working together. Now, I got to tell you, they've heard me say this many times. Steve has heard this, and the mayor's heard this. The collaboration is our greatest strength, having the city and the county and school district work together. I got to tell you, it's also our biggest challenge, because what the superintendent wants sometimes isn't the same what the county administrator wants or what the mayor wants. You know, I'm focused on the school district of La Crosse. He's focused on the county, and he's focused on the city. And sometimes our issues and how we want to deal with them aren't the same. But I got to tell you, we've worked well together, and we've really come up with a position we think that strengthens all three entities. Upjohn Institute said you should have three components to yours, which would make yours better than any others that are going on across the country. Number one, yes, you need the Universal Place-Based Scholarship Program. That's the first key. The second key, though, is the Future Centers, and that's the idea we stole from Denver. In fact, we used the same name because we liked it, at least at this point, because we want the kids to be aware of what other scholarships are available. We want them to make good college choices and good career choices. And we want to be successful once we get there. And then the other part of it is an integrated community development program. If you were going to bring more people to your community, you better have the housing that they're going to want to live in the areas that they want to live in. So you have to be ready for that projected growth. They weren't really ready for that in Kalamazoo. Here's some of the outcomes, and this is, again, I think this is tremendously conservative, but this is what Upjohn reported, so I'm not going to change the numbers. I'll give you the numbers they gave us. They said in the first year that they would estimate, looking at all of our numbers, 845 new residents in the school district of La Crosse, 240 new households, 360 new students in the first year. Remember, Kalamazoo had over 800 new students in the first year. Now, they are a slightly larger school district than we are, but not a lot larger. They're already climbed back to 12,000, but at their low point, they were close to what we were. They also said that by year 10, we would look at an enrollment increase of about 850 students. Why is this important? The number of students you have, the number of residents you have, it's all about state aid, tax base, the revenues to do something better, to address some of the issues that you heard Steve talking about before. More expected outcome, they thought that the new development, there'd be a real pull to the whole county and region by stabilizing the tax base, the new development, and the increasing value of the existing development that you already have. There would be increased revenue for the schools through the new tax base and also through increased state aid. In addition, the ability to retain your professional people, retain skilled and educated workforce, and raise that 60 or lower that 64% of people who don't have a degree, maybe get it down to 34%, which would be great. And there's just the boost to the community and the image of your community to be the education community for the state of Wisconsin. What a draw that would be to the La Crosse area. Now, this is an interesting one, and they said don't undervalue this one. Increased disposable incomes to support greater local retail. Well, I'll give you an example. Jerry Kember had three kids in college at once. You can imagine the drain on the Kember household. Yes, I make a good salary, but still, that's a drain. We wanted to replace the flooring in our house at one point while they were in college. We wanted to replace some of the plumbing in our kitchen, and we wanted to get a different refrigerator, some things like that. We had to put all that on hold when we had three kids in college. Now, imagine if they went to college tuition-free. I would have had the disposable income to invest in the local. I could have hired the local plumber. I could have worked with the local flooring people and done all those things without waiting. But that's what happens, and I think anybody that has kids in college understands that. And if you have three kids in college, you really understand that. Business people like to talk about return on investment. So we're going to give you some return on investment here. This pull to the region for jobs, this pull for the whole economic development, making college accessible for all students, for the first time, really, all students can go to college if they've done well in school and get accepted. The increased real estate values, we've seen it happen in the other communities. This isn't mystery. This isn't a dream. It's happening in other places. Why not in La Crosse? The ability for our local businesses to not only attract their employees, but to keep them here. I mean, you'd want to stay at least 13 years from kindergarten through high school so you get that scholarship, wouldn't you? I would. I stayed here because we have a good school district and a great community. We're looking for other incentives for people to stay here. To reverse those challenging economic trends that Steve so well laid out for us and improve the quality of life for everyone in the region. This isn't a program that's just about the school kids. This helps everybody. Turning around troubled neighborhoods, increasing the efficiencies of local government, raising the recognition as an education community, improving the vitality and economic condition of the region. This doesn't benefit just a few people. This is actually a sign in Kalamazoo. And if you can see, there's all kinds of ages represented. There's young hands, there's older hands, there's all different colors of hands. And the sign says, who benefits from the promise? And the truth is, and we added this part because we believe it's true, if I can get it to come up, there it goes, everyone benefits. The senior citizen benefits by lowering their taxes. The person with the children in school benefits by tuition provided to their kids when they're ready for college. The business owner benefits by attracting business to the community and retaining employees and keeping them and attracting them. It's an interesting solution, and I don't know too many solutions that do make a huge dent on all the fronts that we've heard tonight. So it's an exciting idea. As you can tell, I'm pretty passionate and excited about it. With that, I've also found that whenever we've shared this idea or any of the information that Carl and Larry have shared, there's been a lot of questions. And Steve, I don't know how much we're ready for that at this point. I'm not sure how many people have questions or how much time you want to dedicate to that. And I want to thank you again for giving us this much time tonight. I know it's hard for the school board, it's hard for the city, it's hard for the county to dedicate that much time to a presentation. But thank you for giving us that time, and thank you for funding this project. Here's the quote I promised you from Dr. Brown, Janice Brown. She was formerly the superintendent of Kalamazoo Schools. Study after study indicates that an investment in education adds to the quality of our community and the quality of life for all its citizens. Imagine if we had that something as tangible as that to prove that message. I think it's true. I felt it's true. I've seen evidence. This would be about the most convincing evidence you could ever provide. With that, I'll stop.
I want to thank all of our presenters tonight, and let's see if there are any questions or comments from city council members, school board members, county board members. Anybody have any questions? Bill Brackmiller. And these could be questions for any of the presenters.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kember, in particular, when I've seen you do this, and I've seen all these presentations before. And
you know them then.
Yes, yeah. But I remember when I seen it once before, you mentioned you did some talking, if it were, about some of these. I think what comes to mind are what effects this might have on school districts around La Crosse, if just look. And I think you mentioned that in one of the other presentations.
Well, again, and I brought the book, but I guess I left it out in the car. The book, which is called The Power of a Promise, it's available at some of our local bookstores. It's also available. I got in trouble once because I mentioned you could get it online, and that's not helping the local economy, so I won't mention. I didn't say online, did I? I didn't say that. Okay. But that's true. You know, buy local. It's important. But it is available. It is a great book. And in the book, it talks about the impact on the region and the impact on neighboring school districts. I got to tell you, if we've been losing enrollment 1% to 2% a year for the last 17 years, since about 1992, 93, those enrollments have been going to the outlying areas. And you heard me say earlier that it's not a popular thing to go to a referendum. It's nice to have a new school, but it's not fun to get there. and to find the financing to do it. In the Kalamazoo region, they only saw about a 2% difference. Most of the new population did not come from the outer ring. It came from other parts of the state and actually other parts of the country. So I don't, you know, at least their experience, and I'm not sure in El Dorado, but that's something I can look at what happened there. It did not have a huge negative consequence to the other area schools. I have shared this with some of the area school superintendents, and should we go forward with this idea and you support it, then I would be talking. We meet, in fact, we meet tomorrow morning. I meet with all the superintendents in the region once a month. But I haven't done the presentation for them as yet, but I will.
Other questions or comments? Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the status of this now? I mean, you presented this several months ago initially.
Okay, a lot has happened, actually. We presented it initially in August at the collaboration conference that the county sponsored. Then Brian and Larry, you have to help me. We've had a bunch of meetings since. There have been several local businesses who have really taken an interest in this, and our local realtors have taken a real interest in this. So we brought in those from that August meeting who said they were interested to learn more. We did another presentation in September. Then we did an evaluation, and we had some tabletop conversations. We collected all those ideas and the concerns. Brian created a fact sheet, FAQ sheet, most frequently asked questions, and so we've developed that. Then we took from that meeting and the feedback we got people that said they would be interested in being actively involved in something more happening. We brought that group together. Now we had a meeting before Christmas, and we had another meeting as recently as about 3 weeks ago. So there is a group looking to form a La Crosse Promise Foundation and looking at the Community Foundation as being a supporting organization to the La Crosse Community Foundation. For reasons of ease of getting your 501c3, for ease of investments and all those kinds of things. There have been committees developed, an investment committee, a marketing committee, and an administration committee. There's some great people. There are people from Quick Trip, Franciscan Scamp, Gunderson Lutheran, LHI. Yeah, LHI has taken a leadership role here. Also, all the both universities, the technical college. We have the major businesses, Daryl and Power, have people on a board of advisors to look at this further, study the results that they got from the feasibility study. And so they're looking to form a separate foundation. So that's where it's at right now. And there's been some leadership identified. We have realtors there, private business, parents, educators, all facets of the community represented at the table.
Thank you. This is a question that has a simpler answer, I'm sure.
Okay, I hope.
Are you aware of any college-age students who return home from break where the dads do the laundry instead of the moms or the students
yeah.
themselves?
Right here.
Okay, just check.
Right here. Just last weekend. Right here. Yep. Of course, I mixed in my own, if that's okay. Yeah, okay. All right, all right. I always stick my foot in it somehow. I got Terry's attention on that one. Okay.
Other questions? And I want to first look this direction to city council and school board people, because I want you to feel like you're part of this group and you're not just sitting on the side on the cheap seats. Want to hear from you. Mr. Sweeney.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. One question or one comment you made was this tuition will be paid to public colleges, institutions. It's not taxpayer money. It's just freely donated money. So why would you eliminate private schooling? And if it's because of the tuition costs, can't the tuitions that Promise would facilitate just be a component of the total tuition that the rest of the parents would make up themselves?
We haven't. What I was describing is what they did in Kalamazoo. I was not describing what's being... I told you each city has a different model. Our model includes public and private schools. We want kids to go to Viterbo. We want kids to go to Marquette if they want, to go to Lawrence. But we have set a watermark, if you will, or a level as to what we would fund, and that would be the tuition at the highest costing public college, which is the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So you can go to any college you want, But we did have to put a ceiling on it. But no, we disagreed with what they did in Kalamazoo. We don't want to do it that way.
Other questions? John Menninger, I thought I saw your hand.
Well, my concern is more in the area of regional economic development and kind of like where we go from here, too. And everybody in this room, I think, knows that I was mayor once, and I made some attempts at regional economic development and was rebuffed at every single turn. I had the town of Campbell running down to Madison to become a village so they could protect themselves against the city. Pretty much everybody outside the city of La Crosse wasn't going to do anything with the city. Okay. And I still think that if the city of La Crosse is going to approach the rest of La Crosse County and ask for regional economic development, they're not going to do it. So the question is who gets the ball rolling? Maybe it can be the business community that says it's in this area's interest to work together as a region. Maybe the business community can lead on it. Maybe the county can lead on it. I don't see the altruism amongst locally elected officials to do this, frankly.
So we have a competition between John Menninger and Steve O'Malley to see who can be the most depressing? Is that what?
No, this isn't about altruism, and I won't minimize the challenge we have, but just the fact to get this many people that care deeply about this community together on one night when you didn't have to come to this meeting is an indication that you're willing to listen, you're willing to hear, and move ahead. The concept that we just talked about, how do we reach out to schools that aren't public schools? That outreach has been happening. That discussion has been happening. What would be the role for the city and county? If we can create a model that makes what is now unattractive, high property taxes and the kinds of challenges we talked about, more attractive, that people of higher and moderate income and middle income want to reinvest in this community, then it's up to the city and county to band together and be ready with the bankers and the realtors and other investors to be ready for that kind of redevelopment. We won't be involved as the county in the raising of the money or the philanthropy, but we need to be ready to spearhead and work together with the development community to allow for that kind of redevelopment. That's a role that the city and county can play together. Staff have already been working together on a regular basis on economic development issues. How do we not rob from Peter to pay Paul? We've done a lot more since you've been mayor, where on a staff level we work together on a regular basis. We believe we can be proactive and show you some things as a community that can be ready for that type of development. So we've talked on a staff level of the kinds of things that we need to be ready for if the rest of this happens.
There's a transition happening right now, John, where the original thinking, actually the whole idea of even looking at this, came from the county. And they called me up, and then we brought in the mayor and so on and so forth. But we quickly have realized that government agencies can't be spearheading this thing because it won't work if we try it that way. So what we're taking on a different role. The city and the county are looking purely at the economic development portion of this. The school district is looking purely at the future centers and the development and what we would do to get kids ready for college and then successful in college. And then this other organization that when I answered Tara's question, they're looking solely at the scholarship portion, the fundraising, because it can't be tax dollars. It needs to be private donors. So each of those segments, those three things that you saw the Upjohn Institute recommend, future centers are going to become the responsibility of the school district, but we will be able to accept that responsibility if we can increase our enrollment, like the projections say. The city and the county can further the economic development if they have the new tax base to back it up. And then the scholarship, the fundraising, would be purely the work of this organization that I described to Tara earlier.
I'd like to follow up for just a second, too, if I can jump in just before you, Larry. One of the things, John, that I think as elected officials that we need to do is to figure out a way to make people understand who don't live in the city of La Crosse what's in it for them. You know, but for me to go to my constituents in the town of Onalaska and say, let's give some money to the city of La Crosse, their initial reaction is going to be, are you nuts? But we also have to think in terms of a bigger picture. When somebody says, gee, you know, maybe La Crosse should help do some things for Milwaukee, our initial reaction is, you must be nuts. But we take a look at, you know, two adjoining states, Wisconsin and Minnesota, and our biggest city is an economic drain of our state. in Minnesota, their biggest city is the economic engine of their state. And when I was interviewed on Channel 8 tonight, I made that comparison that we want the city of La Crosse to be our Minneapolis, not our Milwaukee. And if we can convince people and show them how something good for the city of La Crosse is also good for Shelby, Town of Onalaska, Hamilton, Holland, all, you know, the rest of the county, that's what it's going to take. But it's not an easy thing. And I agree with this concept of starting with the private sector first to make that more broad-based. Go ahead, Larry.
I think you said it better than I probably can because you're an articulate lawyer. But
that was a compliment, right?
It was. Kind of a backhanded compliment.
It's better than silver tongue, so that's okay.
All right. Well, what I said is we can't sell this. We've tried to sell it. So we cannot sell, the city of La Crosse cannot sell regional cooperation. So what will continue is there'll still be an annexation battle between the town of Onalaska and Holman, and there'll be squabbles over who gets to chew up Hamilton, and that will continue on until we get everybody talking together. So it starts in the room where the leadership is here, because we don't get to vote. We're just staff. You folks create the future.
And we've thought through some of the logistics of this. We're not talking about transferring money. We're talking about acting as a funding vehicle with the private sector, with the realtors, with the developers, because guess what's in it for the county? Growing tax base in your largest community is going to make a heck of a lot more difference than, remember all that shifts that I talked about last time of where the shift for county taxes is going? It's to the districts outside the city of La Crosse right now to support and deal with a hard-to-serve population. Right now, guess who's paying more of that portion formerly paid by the city? Everybody outside the city. And we can see that percentage shift every year. So we have an economic interest in trying to figure out a way cost-effectively to spur development in the city of La Crosse, whether we recognize it or not. Those numbers have changed over the last several years where we're picking up more and more outside of the city of La Crosse. And there are funding ways to do that along with the private sector. And that's our job as professional staff to help you find those ways and to help lead that. Not to fund the scholarships, but to be ready for the kind of redevelopment that can happen.
I do have a few names on the list at this point. Mr. Bina, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a whole bunch of questions, being an out-county supervisor, but I'm not going to ask all of them tonight. I guess, to Mr. Kember, we have a Governor Doyle plan, which theoretically is going to take care of a lot of the kids.
Yeah.
That want to join that program and keep their grades up.
Right.
What is, are you going to replace that?
Or no.
Why don't you explain that a little bit to me?
Well, their two programs are quite a bit different. The governor's plan is about entrance to college, getting accepted to college. He doesn't pay for it.
Oh, he don't pay for it.
There's a loan program.
Oh, a loan program. Okay.
Okay. So then there's quite a bit of difference. And so actually the two come together quite well. They marry because one helps you get accepted, the other one helps you pay for it.
Okay, then I understand it.
Okay.
Well, the second one is for you too. You know, we share boundaries, and those boundaries used to be resolved by jockeying property values back and forth depending on where that property is. We send 5 buses into Lost Ridge between the city of La Crosse and West Salem on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and that is an expense we don't need. And I made the pitch to West Salem, and nothing ever happened out there, and I never got to you, but there are little things that could be done which will save everybody money if we could jockey property values back and forth. It used to be the local entity from School Board Association that made that decision, but now you got to go to Madison, as I understand. So that's maybe harder to do than you expect.
Yeah, what's really happened, it's interesting when you look at the perimeter of the school district of La Crosse, when you get, particularly in the south area and the western part of our boundary, the areas that you're talking about, there was a lot of trading of property that's gone on over the years.
Yep.
And that's simply done by the gentleman or the woman who lives there, they can come to the school board and ask to trade property with someone else if they want to trade school districts. So, for example, someone in the West Salem school district can say, I want my kids to go to La Crosse schools, and I found a guy down the road who owns about the same size property, and he's agreed to trade properties with me. What's happened now is we have a real checkerboard when you start looking at the outer edge of our, because that's where it's all happening, is where we have, like you said, adjoining properties.
Well, the other one maybe is for you, too. We all have guidance counselors in school systems,
mm-hmm.
and those guidance counselors are steering the students into college and into professions. And what would you do with this futuristic
Future
idea,
Center?
What we aren't doing now?
I'll tell you that our guidance offices and our school board has heard it over and over and over again. When they talk to our students, when they talk to their staff, the guidance offices are terribly underserved. In fact, I asked our personnel office to send me their job description. If you look at their job description, preparing kids, getting kids into college and handling their paperwork is about 20% of what they do. What we need is a future center that 100% of what they do is to not only get them to college, help prepare them for college, pick the right college, and all of that. I got to tell you, I don't know about the guidance office in West Salem, but I can tell you the guidance office in the school district La Crosse, we could not assume the extra burden. So what we are talking about for the future centers is one guidance counselor at each high school focused on that very thing, and that's strictly what they do. And to help reduce the cost of the scholarship program to make sure that kid has applied for at least three other scholarships. So for every scholarship they apply for, that reduces the cost of us providing a scholarship for them. So that would be the focus of that initially. And I got to tell you, the long-term vision, which we've talked about, is maybe the future centers over time could become accessible to all school districts, that it wouldn't just serve the school district La Crosse. Kids from Holman, Onalaska, West Salem, DeSoto, whatever, could also come and use those future centers. That's the dream, but we got a long ways to go before we get there.
Okay, and I'm not opposed to doing the talking, but I'd like to see the bottom line before we make approval. What is it going to affect the outlying area? If what you say is true and we can do what you say we might be able to do, and I'm not sure if we can or not at this point in time because I haven't been involved in this, it would be great.
We should be clear. The decisions are not the county board's or the city council or the school board. If there's a foundation that actually establishes this, this will be an amazing occurrence for our community. We then, as the city and county, need to be ready for that kind of redevelopment. And wouldn't you rather be in a position to be ready to deal with that redevelopment and help businesses, help people reinvest in their community? So those are the kinds of decisions that we would bring you. We don't make a decision if this happens or doesn't happen. We just need to be ready. If this kind of jewel happens for our community, we need to be ready for it.
Any other questions from the city folks or school district folks? Because I don't want you to feel slighted over there, but I do have some more people on the county list if you don't have any questions. All right, that gets me to Ralph Geary then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to that tax disparities preparation, are we generating any resolution that's going to come through any committee that'll work its way to the county board?
I can write that for you, Steve.
Are we generating a resolution?
Or Bill.
I see Carl with University Extension. I thought maybe he was working on a resolution or something, maybe.
You're saying to pursue the ideas expressed in Larry's presentation?
Well, Larry's or Carl's or whatever. Are there going to be a resolution or a series of resolutions at some point in time that's going to work their way through the governing bodies to see if, like John says, they have traction or merit or whatever?
Well, just to summarize my understanding, there were three separate ideas. One showing the limits of the ability to cut your way to tax rate disparity correction. Two, the concept of fiscal disparities, revenue sharing among municipalities. And third, a place-based scholarship program. We haven't had a lot of traction that people are interested in sharing revenues between municipalities. We can certainly produce that as a policy decision, but that idea was presented, I think, Larry, was 2005 or 6?
Yeah, 2005 was the city did the metro pattern, and then the city county worked together on bringing David Rusk here, and that concept came out of there. Future or other collaboration conferences dealt with different topics. So, again, there were four case studies here, and we can certainly come up with a model. All I was, and I think former Mayor Menninger was saying the same thing, that
the city itself probably can't initiate this. If in Denver they created a task force, if you will, to say what are the possibilities, it's almost like the way the promise was conducted. You know, this thing was really talked about at the county level based on what was going on at Kalamazoo. The county got the city and the school district involved. It might be a little bit different. This might be for regional cooperation, economic development, tax base sharing. The county or some other entity, we asked that question in 2006, who would take the lead? But perhaps it's some sort of task force that comes back to the county with some recommendations, people to delve in further into these other models that are out there.
You know, that might be a good topic for the Economic Development Fund to look at, since we kind of have people from all over the place. So why don't we look at putting it on our agenda to try to at least originate some discussion, if nothing else, there.
Yeah, and the other one was with Carl's presentation, I kept thinking he was alluding to a countywide assessor, but he never got there. You know, he's talking about maybe some municipalities didn't pay a lot for their assessors, so they didn't really evaluate the data.
First
maybe
one.
They gave them, they just gave them a percentage increase for everybody, and that's the way it went. And somebody was too high and somebody was too low. But are we, does that have any traction anywhere? Are we going to be discussing a countywide assessor?
Well, my understanding of the latest discussion at the state level is the Department of Revenue has not gotten a lot of support for their proposal. There's still a study group that I know Jeff Blusky and many across the state are working on, whether or not that results in some legislative change. But everything from the towns and villages who obviously haven't seen Carl's presentation, understanding the disparity within districts, haven't understood that, and the county counties association has taken a position that they think it ought to go to a study of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. So there hasn't been a lot of traction there. Evidently, people think that the most complicated assessment system in the country deserves to be perpetuated, and that unfair assessment's fine. So there hasn't been a lot of legs with it, and it's going to take a lot more direction from someone on this body before we're going to spend a lot more time and energy on it.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to all for the great presentation. It was awesome. I recall back in, I think it was 2006, Dr. Rusk's presentation said, sometimes egos get in the way. My question is, how do we get over to the next step? How do we move forward? We talk about duplication of services. We have the IT, purchasing, et cetera, HR departments. How do we get over to that? We've been talking about it for a long time. Who's going to take charge here and move forward?
Well, not them, apparently.
Raise your hands. Everybody
come on.
Raise their hands.
Mr. O'Malley, thank you.
Well, you know that we do that on a countywide basis where we can collaborate with other counties time and time again. Andrea, you and I have talked about this even in the area of IT. We don't provide the same services. We don't do at the county. We don't do utilities. We consolidate and collaborate on law enforcement software, for example, because we patrol in the city is very similar to patrol and records management in the county. We don't have a lot to offer the billing and software system of a utility billing. I've worked in the city. That's a completely different operation than human services. I can't give or have you have access to the case management system and help you at the city, because that's what we use for human services. There are ways that we can work together on IT, and I know with the challenges that that your organization is experiencing, John Parshall has reached out and is offering help to do that. We do cooperative buying when we can and those types of things, but city and county merger is far more controversial and far more complex than just blurting it out and saying it might be an idea. County consolidation is actually easier because we do the same types of things. City consolidations are actually easier because they provide the same services. If the policymakers of this community want to explore that in more depth, we can certainly do that, but it's not an easy thing that's done, and especially with two organizations that have that much different culture organizationally.
But
we'll
also
continue to work in whatever direction mm-hmm. this body gives us a direction on.
With the purchasing powers, though, IT, right now I didn't see any collaborative effort on purchasing, you know, with the IT departments, and I'm hoping the school district and the county and the city now will go forward with combining some of that purchasing power. So thank you.
Audrey Cotter.
Can I say one thing?
Oh, absolutely.
there it is. as good as collaboration sounds, and believe me, I believe in it because I'm working with the Stormwater Group that's trying to collaborate on the public education, I think that regarding this urban sprawl issue and the tax disparity, it's beyond keeping buses from traveling the same routes. It's beyond just simply combining a couple of departments. It's so systemic in the fact that we have so many low-valued properties in this city that until we start changing that dynamic, that demographic, and we start, you know, building up the city, it's not, we can collaborate all we want, and we're not going to change that urban sprawl issue.
Now, Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I've got a very simple question. Has the presentation been made to the Realtors group?
Because which presentation?
Carl's presentation and Steve O'Malley's. The first two we had tonight.
I presented at the Builders Association.
No, the Realtors.
I have not presented at the Realtors Association.
I think that is extremely important that both of those, you do that, please. Thank you.
Good idea. Okay. Josh Frater.
Thank you. I guess this is for Jerry Kimber. We have something that's called open enrollment that the kids can, or their parents, I guess, is decide where they want their kids to go. How would that work into all this?
The simple answer is they wouldn't be eligible. The reason open enrollment kids come to the school district of La Crosse, and I got to tell you, to date, we're on the winning side of that. We bring in about almost $500,000 into the school district through open enrollment. Why do they come here? Because we offer programs and services that not all the smaller districts can offer, like Chinese and things like that. And so our attitude is this, remember, this is a place-based universal idea. Place-based, you have to live in the school district of La Crosse. Now, we have invited the parochial, we've invited Aquinas to also be part of this, because they have a lot of people that live in the school district of La Crosse. They also have 43% of their population that doesn't live in the school district of La Crosse. Those students wouldn't be eligible, nor would our open enrollment. We believe open enrollment kids would still come here because they're not coming here for the tuition. They're coming here for the programs and services that we offer. So we think that would remain. But no, you can't just open enroll to the school district of La Crosse and get the tuition. You have to live here.
That's all I have on the list. Are there any other questions? Jerry Sobranek?
For Mr. Kimber, how would this affect La Crosse residents, La Crosse County residents, who are already in college, say a freshman or sophomore year?
Yeah. There's actually there's a matrix that we've created, and the matrix is based on two things. Over the top is where you live, and on the left side is how long you've been here. So if you live in the city of La Crosse, and you've been here since kindergarten, you get 100%. If you live somewhere else and haven't been here as long, you get something less. And in Kalamazoo, part of the model we're looking at is that you need to be here at least your high school career to get anything. So we don't want people moving in their senior year to try to grab a tuition scholarship.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Well, it is permitted in Wisconsin statutes to do wheel taxes, and typically in the Chicago area, I think Milwaukee, there's some Wisconsin communities, not that many, that have a wheel tax, but that typically would help fund road projects. Like there are some states that have a local option gas tax. So a lot of times federal, as Dale, you may know, you know, it's an 80-20 project. So 80% federal or state, 20% local, where our local always comes from the property tax. Well, other states have a local option gas tax, and they come up with a local share that way. A wheel tax might be another way to do that. Kind of the concept of the RTA. Again, this whole thinking regionally. So if you just have the city of La Crosse create a wheel tax, that's another kind of disincentive. So a lot of these things need to be thought about regionally. And just to follow up on council member or county board member Richmond, I'm confused there for a second. You're on two boards. I guess I'm encouraged by Chairman Doyle's offer to have the County Economic Development Fund start pursuing this whole idea of a regional compact. I think this scholarship program has legs. We didn't know when we presented this in August that this was going to take off and there'd be so much community support. And I think another piece of this, which does come right back to the county, what Steve O'Malley said is we're basically handing this off to the community in terms of a scholarship program. The city or the school district and the city and the county, they're going to work on Promise Centers, Future Centers, and housing economic development programs. But to go back to that question, who takes on this concept of, if it works in Racine, we should study that. So I appreciate Steve's offer to have the County Economic Development Fund Committee. So somebody is going to do something about it.
I want to follow up with a quick question. Steve, am I correct that, is it Eau Claire has a wheel tax, or somebody around the state, I think, does have a wheel tax?
St. Croix County does, and I think there's one or two other cities, but St. Croix is the only county that has it. Okay. They've been doing it for a little while.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Anybody have? Yeah, Brian.
I just wanted to briefly mention there was a feedback form put on your desks for anyone seated over here. I'm going to leave some copies here. If you have a chance, have some thoughts, other things that you'd like to share on these ideas and these trends, please pick one of those up. You can give them back to me, or I'm sure if you got them for your city folks, if you got them back to Larry, you could get them over to me. Likewise with the school district, if you got them to Jerry or Steve or help. I also have some extra packets. These did go out to all the elected officials, but any of the staff that would like an extra packet, I'll leave these over here too.
So I did want to say that we look good because Brian made us look good. So I know Steve said it, yes. Jerry said it, but Brian has done a yeoman's effort here on this whole collaboration conference, all these presentations. So if this promise takes off, it should be known as the Brian Fukuda promise. So,
John Menninger? There you go. Again, I want to thank our friends from the city and our friends from the school district for joining us tonight, and I want to thank our presenters for all the work that they've done, and, of course, Brian for his work. Is there a motion to adjourn by Dennis Monti, second by Bill Brockmiller? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Have a pleasant evening.
Thank you.